A few months ago, I went to dinner with my spouse, Marcus, in downtown Berkeley. And as we were walking along the sidewalk, an older man approached us. And he was selling Street Spirit, the newspaper published and organized by and for unhoused people, to provide a space for their stories, their news commentary, and their art, their poetry. My partner Marcus recognized the person selling the paper instantly and leaned towards him, and the newspaper person, the man selling the newspaper, his face lit up, and he said, "Marcus?" And he gave him a huge smile and a huge hug. "And Rick?" Marcus said, as they embraced. And they exchanged a few words. "How's your mom? What's she doing now?" And Marcus passed him a dollar bill, and we took the newspaper. As we sat down to dinner, I said to Marcus, "Who was that person? Like, how did you know them?" "Oh, that's Rick," Marcus said. "He used to work in the building where my mom worked when I was growing up, and we would play together when I was waiting for my mom to finish her paperwork. I guess he's had a hard time for a few years now, and he doesn't have any work right now." I felt my breath tangle in my chest, and I nodded, not exactly sure what to say. That evening, when we got home, the neighborhood I live in was just getting cozy behind books and television screens. It was trash night and my turn to drag the bins out to the curb. And as I pulled them around the car in our driveway, I noticed someone walking down our street, checking at each recycling bin and pulling out the bottles and cans and putting them in a large plastic bag. For a moment, I thought, could it be Rick? Could it be someone who cared for me when I was a child? Could it be someone who cares for my child now? Could it be my child one day? Could it be me? The person on the street turned towards me and then away almost immediately before we made eye contact, slinging the large bag on his shoulders and moving on. It was not Rick. It was not someone I knew. It was not me, and it was probably not going to be me. I am the one who lives in a cozy house. It is my garbage that is collected and sorted and used at times for another's survival. There is a moment every day when, even in my cozy house, the edge of my life meets the edge of another person's life who has a different story, who has had a different inheritance, a different challenge, a different story of what makes their life come together or fall apart. There is so much messed up in this world, so much broken and tangled and prickly and in need of our attention. There is so much work to be done. I did not sleep well that night. In the morning, I woke up to a sink full of dirty dishes, a closet full of dirty laundry, a broken shelf, and a pile of disorganized papers. My work to do. I went outside because I needed air. And I realized it's probably good that sometimes in my cozy house that I do not rest so well. It was January, and I noticed the largest fruit tree in our backyard was bare. A tangled concoction of persimmon branches. The previous owners of the house had not done the best job caring for this tree. It was winter, the right time for trimming and pruning. My uncle was in town that weekend, and I asked for his help. He stood with me at the base of the persimmon tree and said, "That's a big job." "I know," I said. "Could you help me out?" "Yeah, pruning alone is no fun." "It begins with looking carefully," he said. We stared up at the tree, the trunk, the low branches that twisted from the center, the spiky new growth which prickled towards the sky. "Start by imagining the shape you want," he said. "But remember, it will change as you go." He pointed to the places that were snarled and where the branches were pushing into each other. "This is an area that needs more space for the fruit." I took the clippers in hand, and even with a little help, I still felt uncertain where to begin. I thought about the laundry and the dishes and maybe just going inside and doing the things I already knew how to do. But I stayed. I got up on the ladder with my gloves and I started pruning. As I looked closer, I realized that this seemingly major branch was actually decaying. It was dead, and the new growth was coming from a different branch underneath the older branch. "That one has to go," I said, pointing at the dead branch, my eyes wide. "Yep," my uncle said. "You got the hang of it." "Sometimes," he said, "you have to address a major branch, one that looks structurally important, but it needs to go to allow the tree to live, to continue to bear fruit." As we tended to the persimmon, I thought about Rick and the people who live in our community who are unhoused, who sort through the recycling and trash here in my own neighborhood, and those who do so around the world. We are all in this together, this cycle of growth and death, this wretched cycle of wealth accumulation and the resulting poverty. I knew that just as Tim and I were pruning a tree that neither of us planted, that would hopefully bear fruit long after we are both gone, the world we live in was created by people other than ourselves. It may not be of the design we would choose. I do, however, as do we all, have the opportunity, the responsibility, to tend to the branches so they may be healthy and bear fruit for our tables. Like the prickled branches of the persimmon tree, I sometimes feel overwhelmed just listening to the news. To this weekend, just another shooting in Texas, 53 people killed by gun violence just in August. I stand staring at what I think is the base of the problem, wondering what to do. "The work of the world," Marge Piercy writes, "is as common as mud." And yet, that is the work that is real. I would suggest this morning as well that as this work is what is the foundation of our lives and ultimately what saves us. Psychologist Marshall Rosenberg notes that we have a deep need, perhaps the deepest need that we have, is to contribute to the lives of others. That feeling that being present, that what we have to offer matters to someone else or some other creature, is a delicious, delicious feeling. I don't need to tell you that labor is not equal in this country. Nothing has taught me this more viscerally in my own life than the experience of being a parent. My public labor, my career as a minister, is a primary identity for me and a primary orientation in my life. I've been allotted for things that I've done in my public ministry, but no one shows up with an award when I handle the fifth tantrum of the week. And yet this is the work of the world, as common as mud. I think particularly among ministers or other people in the religious leadership area, including people in congregations and lay leadership, that we sometimes imagine the call of the Spirit of life is something like this golden light shining down with really clear directions on sort of what to do to have a good life or what to do to have a good community, and that it's these crystal clear experiences in which we experience clarity about our labor or our work or what to do when we wake up in the morning. I certainly have expected instructions from the divine to show up the way that the coordinates show up when I enter in my destination on Google Maps. Can someone just say, like, 2 miles ahead, take a left? But it's not like that. No one's calculating the traveling time, the traffic anticipated. No one really knows where we're going to end up. My experience of living an awakened or awakening life is more like traveling on a narrow forest path with no smartphone, no cell reception, no Google Maps, no Garmin, and maybe a flashlight with dying batteries, where I can see about one step ahead of me at a time. It is more like stepping onto a ladder, hopefully with someone you trust anchoring you, and climbing up into the tangles of what has been passed down, the muck, for me, of internalized patriarchy and white supremacy, two branches of my own cultural, racial history, and to say there are pieces that are dead and dying here. This is the tree from which I come, and it is my work to cut away and make room for new growth. It is especially an honor to know that Joanna Macy is preaching here next week. I hope you will all come and hear her. She has been a primary spiritual mentor of mine for years. And she speaks about this concept of the great unraveling, and also of the great turning. And when you imagine the great unraveling, she describes it as being often what we're seeing in the news. Rising sea levels, fiercer storms, the intensity of violence, and the problems of the world. It seems as if everything's unraveling. And she says, it may be that in 10,000 years, our descendants look back and say, that was the time, not of the great unraveling, but of the great turning. In a workshop that I did with her, she had us each sit in a circle and name some effort, something we were doing that we felt passionate about. And after we named the thing, the group responded with the phrase, "That's how it goes in the great turning." That's how it goes in the great turning. So we send emails, we visit the sick, we listen to people's stories, we tell our own stories, we sign postcards and send them to our leaders, we set out our recycling so that it's easy for others to take. We contribute the resources and time and energy and care that we have to give. There is no effort that goes unacknowledged in the great turning. We need everyone, says Greta Thunberg. Greta, you may have heard about, is the 16-year-old Swedish student who just recently sailed from Europe to the United States to continue her vital campaign to raise awareness about the risks posed by climate change. We need everyone. That's how it goes in the great turning. For everything worth fighting for, there is a fight for which we don't know the outcome, for which we cannot exactly see what branch will go and stay, what direction we will turn next. But the work of the world is before us. We are here to tend to the tree of life and justice. We are the ones. I just want to invite you to take a moment and think for yourself something you've done in the last day, week, month that has contributed to the well-being of another or of this planet. Maybe you remembered your cloth bags when you normally forget them. Doesn't matter how small. Something you have done. Because chances are there wasn't any acknowledgement for that contribution. And this, I think, is one of the gifts of being together in a spiritual community, is offering one another that acknowledgement. So turn to a neighbor. I mean it, really. Turn to a neighbor, smile at them. And the invitation is just to share one thing that you've done that's contributed to life and the well-being of others, yourself, the world. And the response that you'll give your neighbor is very simple, one line. That's how it goes in the great turning. Go ahead. That's how it goes in the great turning. More good things happening than can be acknowledged in a few moments with your neighbor. The pitcher cries for water that is real, and each of us for work that is real. For those of us like myself who have a cozy home, may we reach out. May we do the tasks that challenge and scare us, find the edges where our lives meet those who are in great suffering. May we all tend to the tree of justice and life that we did not plant, whose fruit we may not eat of, We are the ones. Now is our time, and we are not alone. May we be of use of a higher purpose to our fellow creatures, great and small. May we serve our God and all of her people. Amen, and blessed be.